Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, May 26th, 2025, and happy Memorial Day. From the front page of the paper, World War II Vets Purple Heart, Home at Last, by Christy Gutowski, Chicago Tribune. In the hard-fought campaign to liberate the Philippines during World War II, 22-year-old Army Corporal Henry Vandernoord of suburban Lansing was hit with shrapnel during a key battle on the island of Luzon. Vandernoord survived, as did three brothers who also served their country in the war, and earned a Purple Heart for the combat injury he suffered in May 1945. This month, as Memorial Day approached, Vandernoord's firstborn grandchild, Chris Reed, held the heart-shaped medal for the first time in about 25 years after Illinois Treasurer Michael Frericks presented it to him during a poignant ceremony. Frericks' office had preserved the medal in a government vault since 2020, when a Geneva bank turned it over to the state from an abandoned safe deposit box. Reed told the Tribune he had lost track of the box during his frequent moves while serving in the U.S. Air Force. Reed, who now lives outside Atlanta, said his grandfather had given him the medal in the 1970s when he was 8 or 9 years old. He smiled as Frericks opened a small weathered case to reveal not only his grandfather's medal, but also the pencil markings that Reed, as a young boy, had scribbled inside the lid. "It was a cool box, but I had no idea at the time what it really meant," said Reed, 57, who came to realize the medal's significance as he grew older and through his own military service. "I never really put two and two together back then about what he endured," he said. "He did almost make the ultimate sacrifice." The Illinois Treasurer is the state's custodian of unclaimed property, which includes everything from lost bank accounts and insurance policies to stamps, coins, jewelry, and military medals. The Treasurer's office has returned an estimated $2.2 billion in forgotten cash and stock to individuals, employers, and nonprofits during Frericks' three terms, according to the office. The Treasurer launched a special effort, Operation Purple Heart, in late 2021 to raise awareness about the unclaimed medals. To date, Frericks has returned 13 Purple Hearts, including the most recent medal belonging to Vandernoord, presented to Reed on May 4th. Last winter, the Tribune wrote about its own efforts to identify the veterans behind the remaining unclaimed Purple Hearts. After months of researching public records and interviewing people linked to the safe deposit boxes, the Tribune has succeeded in 10 of the 11 cases on the Treasurer's public list. At that time, Vandernoord's medal was not included on that list. Members of the office reached out to Reed earlier this year after tracking him down near Atlanta. The Treasurer's office has been working to verify the claims of families who have come forward following the Tribune's reporting, officials said. Henry Vandernoord died February 3, 1991, at the age of 68. A retired Lansing police lieutenant, he last lived in the small Kankakee County of Moments, about 50 miles south of Chicago, where Reed said his grandfather loved to spend his days on the river in his fishing boat. Reed, who was in his early 20s when his grandfather died, said Vandernoord didn't speak much about the war. "He was very humble about it," he said. Reed said his grandfather, one of eight children, earned the nickname Babe within the family because he was an infant when they arrived in the United States from the Netherlands. The moniker stuck even after he went off to war. He was in the Army's 38th Field Artillery Division and traveled to Hawaii, New Guinea, and the Philippines during his estimated 2 years of service, according to his family and public records. During a lengthy recuperation from the shrapnel wound he suffered May 3, 1945, he ended up in the same hospital as one of his older brothers, Private First Class Edward Vandernoord of the Army's 11th Airborne Division, who had injured his ankle in a parachute jump, according to the Treasurer's Office. Memorial Day, by the numbers, a time to honor and mourn. Holiday history. Memorial Day is a day of remembrance for those who died in service to their country. The holiday was officially proclaimed in 1868 to honor Union and Confederate soldiers and was expanded after World War I to honor those who died in all wars. Today, Memorial Day honors over 1 million men and women who have died in military service since the Civil War. How to display the flag. On Memorial Day, the flag should be flown at half staff from sunrise until noon, then raised briskly to the top of the staff until sunset in honor of the nation's battle heroes. Holiday weekend travel. AAA projects 45.1 million people will travel at least 50 miles from home over the Memorial holiday period. This year's domestic travel forecast is an increase of 1.4 million travelers compared to last year and sets a new Memorial Day weekend record. 70,000 volunteers anticipated to visit 54 Veterans Affairs National Cemeteries this year throughout Memorial Day weekend. 27,000 plus. Flowers to be placed on the graves of veterans by an expected 390 volunteers with the Victory for Veterans nonprofit organization this year. 25 plus. States where 2,500 volunteers will participate in this year's Travis Mannion Foundation's The Honor Project, visiting over 50 cemeteries throughout Memorial Day weekend. Volunteers place handcrafted commemorative tokens at the resting places of fallen heroes and pause to reflect on their service and sacrifice. National cemeteries. 5.4 million plus people, including 4.1 million veterans from the Revolutionary War to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, are buried in national cemeteries. The National Cemetery Administration honors eligible veterans, active duty service members, and eligible family members with the final resting places in national shrines. In 1849 was the year the oldest national cemetery was established, Benica Arsenal in California. The largest national cemetery is in Riverside, California, at 1,237 acres. The smallest national cemetery is Hampton VAMC in Virginia, at 0.03 acres. And the year the newest national cemetery was established, January 2020, in Morovis, Puerto Rico. Why are flags flown at half staff? The American flag flies at half staff when the country or a state is in mourning. In most cases, it is marked by one of three observances: Memorial Day, or another national day of remembrance; a national tragedy; or the death of a government official, military member, or emergency first responder. Why Monday? On June 28, 1968, Congress passed the Uniform Monday Holiday Act, which moved four holidays, including Memorial Day, to a specified Monday to create a convenient three-day weekend. The change moved Memorial Day from its traditional May 30th date to the last Monday in May. The law took effect at the federal level in 1971. Today's National Moment of Remembrance. 1 minute, the amount of time to observe a moment of silence, to remember and reflect on the sacrifices made by so many to provide freedom for all. 3 p.m. local time is the time set by President Bill Clinton to observe the national moment of remembrance. Observances, history of a holiday, a closer look at Memorial Day's origins and evolution. Memorial Day is supposed to be about mourning the nation's fallen service members, but it's come to anchor the official start of summer and a long weekend of discounts on anything from mattresses to lawnmowers. Here are a few things to know about Memorial Day. Why it's celebrated. It's a day of reflection and remembrance of those who died while serving in the U.S. military, according to the Congressional Research Service. Origin stories. The holiday stems from the American Civil War, which killed more than 600,000 service members, both Union and Confederate, between 1861 and 1865. There's little controversy over the first national observance of what was then called Decoration Day. It occurred May 30, 1868, after an organization of Union veterans called for decorating war graves with flowers, which were in bloom. The practice was already widespread on a local level. Waterloo, New York, began a formal observance on May 5, 1866, and was later proclaimed to be the holiday's birthplace. Yet Bowlesburg, Pennsylvania, traced its first observance to October 1864, according to the Library of Congress. And women in some Confederate states were decorating graves before the war's end. David Blight, a Yale history professor, points to May 1, 1865, when as many as 10,000 people, many of them black, held a parade, heard speeches, and dedicated the graves of Union dead in Charleston, North Carolina. A total of 267 Union troops died at a Confederate prison and were buried in a mass grave. After the war, members of black churches buried them in individual graves. What happened in Charleston does have the right to claim to be the first, if that matters, Blight told the Associated Press in 2011. Controversies. Someone has always lamented the holiday's drift from its original meaning. As early as 1869, the New York Times wrote that the holiday could become sacrilegious and no longer sacred if it focuses more on pomp, dinners, and oratory. In 1871, abolitionist Frederick Douglass feared Americans were forgetting the Civil War's impetus, enslavement, when he gave a Decoration Day speech at the Arlington National Cemetery. We must never forget that the loyal soldiers who rest beneath this sod flung themselves between the nation and the nation's destroyers, Douglass said. How the day was spent, at least by the nation's elected officials, could draw scrutiny for years after the Civil War. In the 1880s, then-President Grover Cleveland was said to have gone fishing. And people were appalled, Matthew Dennis, an emeritus history professor at the University of Oregon, told the AP in 2023. By 1911, the Indianapolis 500 held its inaugural race on May 30th, drawing 85,000 spectators. A report from the Associated Press made no mention of the holiday or of any controversy. How it's evolved. Dennis said Memorial Day's potency diminished somewhat with the addition of Armistice Day, which marked World War I's end on November 11, 1918. Armistice Day became a national holiday by 1938 and was renamed Veterans Day in 1954. An act of Congress changed Memorial Day from every May 30th to the last Monday in May in 1971. Dennis said the creation of the three-day weekend recognized that Memorial Day had long been transformed into a more generic remembrance of the dead, as well as a day of leisure. In 1972, Time magazine said the holiday had become a three-day national hootenanny that seems to have lost much of its original purpose. Even in the 19th century, grave ceremonies were followed by leisure activities, such as picnicking and foot races, Dennis said. The holiday also evolved along baseball and the automobile, the five-day work week, and summer vacation. According to the 2002 book, A History of Memorial Day, Unity, Discord, and the Pursuit of Happiness. In the mid-20th century, a small number of businesses began to open defiantly on the holiday. Once the holiday moved to Monday, the traditional barriers against doing business began to crumble, authors Richard Harmond and Thomas Curran wrote. These days, Memorial Day sales and travel are deeply woven into the nation's muscle memory. From page 5 of the National and World of the Decatur Herald and Review, National and World News, May 26th. The Digest. Russia, Ukraine finish major prisoner exchange. Kyiv, Ukraine. Russia and Ukraine swapped hundreds more prisoners on Sunday, the third and last part of a major exchange that reflected a rare moment of cooperation in otherwise failed efforts to reach a ceasefire in the more than 3 years of war. Hours earlier, the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv, and other regions came under a massive Russian drone and missile attack that killed at least 12 people and injured dozens. Ukrainian officials described it as the largest aerial assault since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February 2022. Russia's defense ministry said each side exchanged 303 soldiers, following the release of 307 combatants and civilians, each on Saturday, and 390 on Friday, the biggest total swap of the war. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky confirmed Sunday's exchange, saying on X that 303 Ukrainian defenders are home. Pope completes steps to become Rome Bishop. Rome. Pope Leo XIV declared himself a Roman on Sunday as he completed the final ceremonial steps, cementing his role as the Bishop of Rome. The first American pope formally took possession of the St. Louis Lateran Basilica, which is Rome's cathedral and seat of the diocese, with an evening mass attended by Roman priests and faithful. He then took the Pope Mobile for a visit to St. Mary Major, where he prayed before Pope Francis's tomb. In his homily, Leo said he wanted to listen to them in order to learn, understand, and decide things together. Switzerland. The bodies of 5 skiers were found on a glacier above the Swiss resort town of Zermatt, authorities said Sunday, after 2 hikers reported seeing abandoned skis near the Rimpfschorn, a 4,000-meter peak in the Alps. France. A second major power outage hit southeastern France early Sunday, this time in the city of Nice, after an electrical facility was damaged by suspected arson. The Nice blackout started around 2 a.m. and left some 45,000 households without electricity. Saturday's outage was in the city of Cannes. Venezuela. Voters in Venezuela went to the polls Sunday to choose lawmakers, governors, and other officials against a backdrop of heightened government repression and opposition calls to boycott the election. Members of the military outnumbered voters at many polling centers. Tel Aviv. A dual U.S.-German citizen was arrested on charges that he traveled to Israel and tried to firebomb the branch office of the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv, officers said Sunday. Federal prosecutors in New York said Joseph Neumeier walked to the embassy building on May 19th with a backpack containing Molotov cocktails, but dropped his backpack as a guard tried to grab him. Argentina. The Archbishop of Buenos Aires, Jorge Garcia Cuerva fiercely criticized Argentine President Javier Milei during a religious ceremony the leader attended Sunday, saying that under the government's policies, fraternity, tolerance, and respect are dying. Poland. Tens of thousands of Poles took place in dueling patriotic marches Sunday in Warsaw, led by the two men vying for the presidency in a June 1 runoff election, which is expected to be close and consequential for the nation's future. Minneapolis, murder of George Floyd. Thousands mark anniversary of death. Police reform and civil activists joined thousands of ordinary people on Sunday to mark the fifth anniversary of George Floyd's murder and decry the Trump administration for actions they say set their efforts back decades. The Reverend Al Sharpton said at a graveside service with the dead man's family in Houston that Floyd, 46, represented all of those who are defenseless against people who thought they could put their knee on our neck. He compared Floyd's killing to that of Emmett Till, a 14-year-old black child who was abducted, mutilated, and slain in Mississippi in 1955 after being accused of offending a white woman. What Emmett Till was in his time, George Floyd has been for this time in history, Sharpton said. Events in Minneapolis centered on George Floyd Square, the intersection where police officer Derek Chauvin used his knee to pin Floyd's neck to the pavement for 9.5 minutes, even as Floyd cried, "I can't breathe." By midday Sunday, a steady stream of people were paying their respects at a memorial in front of Cup Foods, where he was killed. Across the street, activists set up a feeding area at an old gas station that had often served as a staging area since Floyd's death. Events started Friday with concerts, a street fair, and a self-care fair, and were set to culminate with a worship service, gospel concert, and a candlelight vigil on Sunday. Local events, rides draw attention, nostalgia. First Responders Car Show brings crowds to Decatur, by Valerie Wells. Decatur. Tony Lucas loves car shows so much that he drove 2,400 miles from Abbotsford, British Columbia, Canada, to bring his 1972 AMC Ambassador to the Central Illinois First Responders Car Show, held at Decatur's Rotary Park on Saturday. His Ambassador is decked out as a California Highway Patrol car, complete with a mannequin in the back seat, dressed in prison stripes, a patrolman standing outside the car, holding a donut, more donuts and coffee inside, handcuffs on the seat, and even a breathalyzer kit. Lucas is a firefighter home in British Columbia and was headed even farther to a car show in Delaware after the show here. I like American cars and American Motors cars, and I have another one, Lucas said. I saw this one and I thought, I can do something with that. And as a firefighter for 28 years, I just thought it would be neat to have a car to support first responders. The car show was held next to the Macon County Law Enforcement Training Center, and proceeds benefit the Police Benevolent and Protective Association. The charitable organization whose members organize events like Shop with a Cop and Trunk or Treat for area children. President Jason Danner said the show was open to all makes, models, and years, anyone who wanted to show off their car. Among the shiny, polished cars was a Volkswagen Beetle that was a bit worse for the wear, bearing a bumper sticker, "Yes, it's cool. No, I'm not going to paint it." Former Coles County Sheriff Darrell Cox brought his 1936 Ford Flathead V8, a four-door humpback sedan, which he fixed up to look like a police car of its era, though it actually wasn't. "It's a reproduction," Cox said. "I was deputy sheriff in Coles County, and when I decided to run for sheriff, I thought I needed something. So I bought this car and painted the white on it and put the siren on it, and did a few other things to it. He drove the car on the campaign trail to draw attention. He served as sheriff from 2006 to 2014. A fun feature of this model, he said, is a wind-up clock in the car. A string hanging down from the rearview mirror winds the clock. Jennifer and Dax Wallace drove their 2007 Chevrolet Corvette Z06 to the show from their Springfield area home. The car's color, she said, is atomic orange, and the drive resulted in too many dead bugs stuck to the atomic orange exterior to suit her, so she spent considerable time wiping it down and shining it up after they arrived. Dax Wallace works at the sheriff's office in Sangamon County and is a former firearms instructor at the Macon County Law Enforcement Training Center. The couple are strong supporters of first responders. "We don't drive it a whole lot," Jennifer Wallace said. "If the weather's nice, we take it out to the movies or for date night." "This is awesome," Dax Wallace said. "They're almost out of room for exhibitors." On page 2, Bill Passed to Raise Age of Senior Driving Tests by Jade Aubrey, Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. A bill unanimously passed by the Senate on Thursday and on its way to Governor J.B. Pritzker's desk will increase the age that senior drivers in Illinois are required to take an annual driver's test. Currently, if a driver renews their driver's license between the ages of 79 and 80, they are required to take a driving test. Drivers between the ages of 81 and 86 are required to take a driving test every 2 years, and drivers 87 and older have to take the test annually. If Pritzker signs House Bill 1226, sponsored by Senator Rahm Villavam, Democrat Chicago, only drivers 87 and older will have to take an annual driver's test. Illinois drivers between 79 and 86 won't be required to take a driver's test to renew their license. Instead, they'll only have to take a vision test and, if they have a driving violation, a written test. The bill would also allow a spouse, parent, grandparent, sibling, or child of any Illinois driver to submit medical information about the driver to the Secretary of State if they think the person's medical condition interferes with their driving abilities. Currently, only medical officials, police officers, and state's attorneys can submit such information. HB 1226, also called the Road Safety and Fairness Act, has garnered bipartisan support. Illinois Secretary of State Alex Janulius announced his support for the bill in January, alongside lawmakers from both sides of the aisle. The bill was conceived by a constituent of Representative Jeff Kiker, Republican Sycamore, last year. The bill has 86 co-sponsors in the House and 35 in the Senate. Illinois is the only state that requires seniors to pass a driving test solely due to their age. But state data indicates that older drivers tend to have lower crash rates. In 2023, the crash rate for drivers aged 75 and older was 24.61 per 1,000 drivers, which was lower than any other age group, according to the Illinois Department of Transportation. The low crash rate has been consistent since at least 2018, according to the Secretary of State's Office's 2023 study on age-related driving abilities. The crash rate is more than double for many of the other age groups. Boat explosion. An explosion on a boat transporting raw sewage that was docked on the Hudson River in New York City killed a longtime city employee on Saturday, authorities said. Another worker was injured. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the reading of the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, May 26, 2025. Please stay tuned.